That's the biggest challenge of our time.
This is the greatest opportunity presented to the American people in 100 years.
Are they talking about inhabiting Mars? No. Time travel? No. Curing cancer or AIDS? No. Here's a clue.
Light bulb by light bulb, power plant by power plant, we can make decisions to redirect and reprioritize clean energy and not make continued investments in dirty power that will saddle our country with the high cost of dirty energy for decades to come.
Today on A World of Possibilities, Dirty Business, the uncertain quest to clean up coal. Mineralogists tell us there's enough of it underground in Appalachia and the West to power our electrical needs for another 100 years or more. But at what cost to our atmosphere and our climate? Rapidly rising awareness of the risks of climate change is driving together constituencies that have long been suspicious of one another. Deep in the heart of Texas, business executives, mayors, environmental activists, evangelical Christians, and Wall Street investment houses are uniting in a common quest to block the wholesale expansion of coal-fired power plants. The ancestral ethos of endless expansion is being supplanted by an emerging ethic of livable limits. Listen to a top Dallas business executive not previously known for his environmental sympathies.
Forward-looking business people realize that we have to make better use of the resources that we have, and there has been a feeling in Texas of just using everything as quickly as we can, and there's really no limits on our growth. And now we realize that there are, and we have to use our resources more efficiently.
What's that you say?
You had, you know, Wall Street and that crowd beginning to say, hey, wait a minute, Laura Miller, the mayor of Dallas, who's a key figure in pushing this forward.
We've had 7 years of being backward and not being progressive and being forward. Congress now, you see them talking about these issues, and my hope is that they will see what's happening around the country and see the mayors and see the governors who are doing this, and they will say the public wants this.
When the mayors of oil dynasty Dallas and Houston say, whoa, you know that a different kind of twister has hit the state of Texas, and it's turning more than a few minds in a new direction. Towards conservation as the true conservatism, energy efficiency as the next business bonanza, and renewables as a viable replacement for climate-clogging coal. It's a movement blowing like a prairie wind across the high plains and depthless canyons of the American West. Here's a dispatch from the governor of Montana.
So unless you're willing to live naked in the tree and eat nuts, we need to have short-term energy supplies and conservation, a medium-term plan for breaking our addiction to foreign oil, and a longer-term plan for eliminating emissions of carbon dioxide.
The new message is loud and clear. We don't just need any energy, we need clean energy. I'm Mark Summer. Join us as we probe whether there's a place for cleaned-up coal in a climate-challenged world. Welcome to A World of Possibilities. Flip the switch on your house lights. Charge up your cell phone. Hey, plug in a car. Where does the electrical current come from? Oil? Not much. Natural gas? Some. But much of it is coming from coal, the ultimate fossil fuel. It's been a source of heat, energy, and pollution for hundreds of years. It fueled the Industrial Revolution. So did the cities of Europe, just as today it fouls the atmosphere in Beijing and hundreds of other Chinese cities. Half our electricity is coal-generated, excavated by strip mines in the American West or underground mines in Appalachia. Author Jeff Goodell has plumbed deeply into the past and future of fossilized carbon in his book, Big Coal, The Dirty Secret Behind America's Energy Future. Documenting our dependence on coal, he looks specifically at the Texas tussle that took place over a utility's plan to build 11 coal-fired power plants in the Lone Star State. TXU stirred up a fearsome fuss with its plans, generating heat and light of a kind not often seen in Texas politics. The author of numerous books, Jeff's also a frequent contributor to the New York Times Magazine and a contributing editor at Rolling Stone. Jeff Goodell joins us now by phone from New York.
As far as burning the coal industry likes to tout this idea of clean coal. It's a phrase that you can feel has been focus grouped over and over and over again, and it sounds really great, like fat-free donuts or something. You know, if you look at it from a 1970s standard, from a 1970s point of view, the things that we cared about in the 1970s, like sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxides, which are the two main pollutants that cause what we think of as smog, the new plants certainly are a lot better and they are a lot cleaner. But when you look at the things we care about today, mercury emissions, coal plants are the biggest emitters of mercury in the world, but even more important, carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases. By that standard, they're no cleaner than they were, or marginally cleaner than they were 30 or 40 years ago. And so when it comes to global warming and dealing with global warming, coal plants are far from clean. In fact, they're the largest point sources of these gases in the world.
There are different kinds of coal. There's high sulfur, low sulfur. And I know that, or at least I've heard, that the coal that comes out of, say, the Intermountain West in the United States is of a higher quality than that that's coming out of China, for example. Is that right?
We don't import much coal from China. The coal in China, like coal everywhere, has various grades of it, but we don't really get much from them. The coal that comes out of the Intermountain West is better quality coal if you look at it, again, from this as a marker of the 1970s kinds of pollutants, especially sulfur. One of the reasons the coal is so popular that comes out of the West, part of it is because it's cheap to mine, because it's big, thick 60 or 70-foot seams of coal compared to the narrower seams in the East, but it also has low sulfur content so that you can burn this coal in power plants without having to put the scrubbers that you have to put onto the power plants that burn a lot of the Eastern coal. So it's cheaper for a lot of the power companies to burn it. But the downside of Western coal, and this is a big issue that needs to be underscored, the coal from the West has a lower BTU content, in other words, a lower energy content. To make the same amount of energy burning Western coal, you have to burn more of it, which means that it's in fact more carbon dioxide intensive than Eastern coal. So from a global warming point of view, burning Western coal is really a step backward.
What we see is that although coal is plentiful, it's going to be more difficult to get to, more expensive, and that the climate implications are enormous, and that even if you sequester it, you may not be able to get rid of the problem. It may come out in unpredictable ways that could be extremely harmful to the climate and to human health. So at the same time, many people are saying there's just no way you're going to quickly wean yourself from coal. Partly because the whole infrastructure is set up for coal now as half of our energy supplies, and you can't quickly move to renewables from that, and that the near-term costs of coal are lower than those of solar and wind. Is that really true if you do full cost accounting?
Well, no. If you did full cost accounting, nobody would burn coal. The big thing in the future here that is going to begin to change the dynamic, and you saw that already with the TXU deal, TXU had proposed 11 new coal plants and then canceled 8 of them, is what is going to be the price on carbon dioxide emissions in the future. There's no question that there will be a price put on them. The question is how soon and how big will that price be? And in any scenario, coal is a loser in this way because coal is by far the most carbon-intensive fuel. On moderate scales, there are ways of dealing with it, but in the long term, this is going to kill coal. The question is, how long? Is it going to be 10 years or 50 years? And I don't think anyone is thinking beyond that. I think it's just a question of how serious this global warming problem gets, how quickly, and what the political response to it is.
Now, you've said that big coal has lots of allies in important places in the economy and in politics. Is it linked closely with the owners of oil and other fossil fuels?
No, not really. I mean, it's sort of its own. There are overlaps, but it's pretty much its own empire. The power companies that burn a lot of coal are a very powerful force, but they're agnostic. If you can show a power company a way to, you know, put up a solar plant at half the price of a coal plant, they don't have any romantic feelings about coal. They'll go to whatever's cheapest and whatever works for them. And then there's the railroads, which are very invested in coal, especially in the West. And without coal, they would be in tough shape. And another really important political factor that really needs to be mentioned is that one of the reasons coal gets such favored treatment is not only the sort of history of subsidies and things like that, but when you look at an electoral map for anyone who wants to run for president or any high office, all of the big, powerful swing states are heavily invested in coal. You know, you can't come off as being much of a coal critic and hope to go to the White House.
As you look at things like the TXU deal, which brought together the most unlikely allies, and not just the environmentalists, but there were CEOs from major corporations in Texas, there were evangelicals, there were just a range of constituencies that came together to block this deal and arrange a buyout. And Wall Street, in this case, had been targeted by the environmentalists and others, and very effectively moved in and created a different kind of deal. Is this the harbinger of a kind of shift that will happen in the sort of smart money that invests in various forms of energy for the future?
I think that you did see this sort of first example of this alignment between environmental groups, and not just any environmental groups. You had environmental defense, which is a very market kind of driven industry, some people would say industry-friendly group, who were very aggressive against TXU and sort of spearheaded the charge. But crucially, you also had local political establishment in a place like Texas, which is like as business-friendly as anywhere in America, where it's just, there's no such thing traditionally there. But you had mayors of places like Dallas, Laura Miller, the mayor of Dallas, who was a key figure in pushing this forward. And then on top of all that, you had, you know, Wall Street and that crowd beginning to say, hey, wait a minute, what if a price does come down on carbon dioxide? What kind of a liability do we want financially? And what kind of a liability do we want for our company? I mean, it's going to become increasingly difficult for power companies or investors to be associated with projects that are willfully trashing the climate. There was a really strong sense in this fight that this is just the wrong thing to do. It's wrong locally. Laura Miller was very articulate about it being wrong because of air pollution problems and things like that. But it was also wrong in the biggest sense of what the purpose of capitalism is and what our role is as Americans. And I think that all of those forces came together there in a very powerful way.
That's interesting, that notion that it's the wrong way for capitalism to go.
The question is now, how do we continue this, you know, modern world that was sort of built by burning coal without burning coal? And that's the problem here, is that, you know, we don't have 40 years to wait for some other new technology to develop. You know, we have to start making decisions about this now.
Jeff Goodell, author of Big Coal. After a short break, we'll meet an unlikely convert to the anti-coal movement, who was inspired by Jeff's writing to take issue with the governor's fast-tracking of power plant permits.
I do think that politicians are changing their view of this, and it's for one reason, because all of their constituents are saying we need to have cleaner air and we're afraid.
Meet the mayor of Dallas, Laura Miller, next.
You're listening to A World of Possibilities. To hear the podcast of this program and to access our show archives, please visit our website at aworldofpossibilities.com or visit iTunes.
Jeff Goodell's book struck a chord deep in the energy politics of Texas, where you'll find a culture and economy long wedded to oil and gas extraction. But what's less widely known is the abundance of coal in Texas. It's everywhere, beneath the brown sagebrush of West Texas and under the green thickets of East Texas. This is a big state with big cities that have big energy needs. Into the fracas steps Dallas Mayor Laura Miller. She's a transplant, originally from Baltimore, who worked as a journalist for papers like the Miami Herald, the New York Daily News, and the Dallas Morning News. She became mayor of Dallas in 2002. Though not a native Texan, she has that Texas spunk and moxie that a soul needs to run a city like Big D, but with a difference. She finds it nonsensical that we're still so reliant on a non-renewable, polluting, and climate-destroying energy resource like coal. And she's taken her case to tiny town meetings all over the state where TXU had planned to site its coal-fired power plants. Mayor Miller is so fired up that when she cycles out of office, she says she'll become a full-time advocate for a climate-friendly energy plan. To tell her story of her conversion to the cause of cleaner air, Laura Miller joins us now from the mayor's office in Dallas.
I got involved because I'm a runner and because I'm outdoors all the time and because I had breast cancer at the age of 39 when I had three small children. It kind of hit me by surprise and there was no good reason for me to get it other than perhaps the environment. So all of that made me aware of the fact that we need to be a cleaner country. And it's very evident as mayor of Dallas when you land at DFW Airport and you see the smog ring, that you don't want to be a dirty city and that it's not good for business and it's not good for tourism. So when TXU came out with this enormously brazen plan to build lots of cookie cutter coal plants, and then the governor stood up and said, I like this so much, I'm going to fast track it so it gets done yesterday. And then I sat down on the beach and read Jeff Goodall's book, and then I really got exacerbated. And that's how it started.
It seems like you're swimming against a certain traditional tide in Texas. As you say, it's never been the strong suit of the legislature to think about conservation. It's sort of been a state that's believed in endless opportunities when it comes to energy. Do you find that the political climate is shifting as the meteorological climate shifts?
I do think that politicians are changing their view of this, and it's for one reason, because all of their constituents are saying we need to have cleaner air and we're afraid. And if these coal plants had been built, we had done extensive air modeling by the University of Texas at Austin just for this purpose of fighting these plants, and it determined that we would not have three non-attainment areas after the coal plants were built, we would have six. And that is the kind of scary message that we have been able to broadcast throughout the state to make it clear that these plants were a bad idea, which is why TXU stock, which was at all-time highs up until the fall of 2006, started declining because of the public outrage about what they were planning to do to our environment and our air quality and our kids' futures in the name of the mighty dollar. And the people of Texas rose up, and it was quite unprecedented. And I hope that that coalition of people and elected officials will stay together to keep on fighting for clean air.
And tell us that story about how it happened. I mean, I'm reading an account from the Dallas Morning News about some of it, and they say TXU didn't see Laura Miller coming.
Well, luckily for me, my entire city council was 100% united that these coal plants should not be built as proposed. We all said to ourselves, let's get some other cities on board to help pay the cost. And so I picked up the phone, started calling other mayors and saying, hey, would you chip in $10,000 and let's form this coalition? And then what really changed the dynamic of it was we were lucky enough to get a major, major commercial litigation firm in Houston called Sussman Godfrey to take our case on pro bono. So Steve Sussman took this on as a personal crusade and spent $2 million of his law firm's money to help our cities fight this. And TXU called Steve Sussman one day and said, hey, we just want you to know that you've got some big cities like Dallas and Houston and Fort Worth, and that's fine that they're going to go fight this and raise all this money. But if you don't have the really small towns near the plants on board in your coalition, we're going to throw you guys out for standing. And so Steve Sussman called me and said, could you go out to some small, really small towns and get them signed up? And so I just got in the car for literally 2.5 months and after work at night and went to these little town council meetings, sometimes in a barn, and asked these city councils to please join our coalition. And it was a very, very hard battle because TXU is the big employer in a lot of these small towns. And everywhere I went, TXU followed.
Oh, wow. I can't imagine. As mayor of Dallas, you're going to these barn meetings. And did you sometimes think, what am I doing here?
Well, the last one I went to, I thought that because I traveled 2.5 hours east and got all ready and created big notebooks for all these council members, and then sat there while they were in executive session on other topics for 2.5 hours. And when they finally came out of their meeting, I got what I wanted. They didn't join TXU's movement to build the plant as requested, but they never let me speak. And that was just astonishing to me that I had come all the way out, and I was the mayor of the 9th largest city in America, and I'd come out to this little town, and they just said, "We're not going to let you talk." And I went, "Okay, got it. I got it. It's your meeting."
A humbling experience. Eh?
Very, very, very.
But eventually you got Waco to join you. Is that right?
Yeah, Waco was critical because they are literally in the ring of fire. A lot of plants were being proposed for the Waco area. And our modeling showed that Waco would be the hardest hit of all and would definitely go into non-attainment for the first time in its history and be in the same boat that Dallas and Houston are in, of being dirty cities that have the stigma of not being in accordance with federal law.
Coming out of that, then other things began to happen. A coalition of top business executives got together. Is that right?
Yes, and that was started also in Dallas. And it was a real curveball for TXU because TXU has traditionally been very engaged in the local business communities and the chambers of all the cities that they have business in. So everybody responded, the business community, the elected officials, the public, the citizenry. I don't go anywhere today in my city where someone doesn't stop me and say, "Thank you for what you're doing on air quality." Everyone's very, very in tune with it and worried about it.
I've heard that even there's an evangelical Christian constituency that joined into this fight. Is that right?
Yes, yes. So that was another astonishing announcement that the clergy had put together an organization of, you know, Baptists against coal or Methodists against coal, but it was significant. It was significant opposition. It was an amazing tide of consciousness about the environment that I think sends a very strong message to states and energy companies all over America.
You're a former journalist. You know how to work with media. Is it, this is the first I've heard that it isn't a truly green deal yet. Is it important, and do you have strategies for using the media to essentially hold TXU's feet to the fire?
Well, I think it's very important that people understand that this could be a much greener deal. And like I said, it's not so much that you expect this private company to be green, except for the fact that they have positioned themselves as being green. And that's, I guess, what kind of rankles me about the whole situation. We have another company called Exelon that came in and bought some old, very dirty gas plants in Dallas and Fort Worth in 2002, also from TXU, bought them from TXU. And immediately, they just very quietly put on some significant, very expensive pollution scrubbers and selective catalytic reduction systems that dramatically reduced the pollution coming from those plants. And I keep saying to the new buyers of TXU, this is what you need to do. This is a company, Exelon, who never went out and raised the green flag and did a whole PR campaign about how green they are. They just did it. And you're doing the opposite. You're raising the flag, but yet you're not doing it. So what am I missing here?
Dallas Mayor Laura Miller. Her city is at once the gleaming oasis that bridges East and West Texas, a citadel of oil wealth, and a hub of forward-thinking business folk who want to make sure the place doesn't lose its luster or its federal highway funds. Brown air, greenhouse gases, and record heat in an already scorching climate don't fit with that clean, button-down business image. And in and around Dallas, you'll find the headquarters of ExxonMobil, American Airlines, Frito-Lay, Radio Shack, and Texas Instruments, as well as 7-Eleven, Dr. Pepper, and Chuck E. Cheese. All want to project a good, clean business picture. Newer-era companies like Hotels.com are also calling Dallas home. David Littman runs Hotels.com, the online site that provides travelers with hotel reservation services. He and others have recruited top business leaders to try to put a stop to plans for more coal-fired power plants. David Littman joins us now by phone from his office in Dallas to explain why, in his view, it's not politics, but good business.
We decided to form a group to oppose the fast-tracking and the building of these coal-fired plants. and we thought it was bad for business reasons. And the major business reason was because most of the major cities in Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, San Antonio, and Austin, are either close to being over the pollution limit under the Federal Clean Air Act, or it's called out of attainment, or right on the brink of it. So these coal-fired plants would contribute to that pollution. Pollution of gases like nitrogen oxide, sulfur dioxide, particulate matter, and mercury. And if we are over the limits by the year 2010 in any of our cities, then we lose access to federal funding for transportation, which means mass transit and highways. And essentially, our growth would be slowed or would stop. And when we saw this as a threat to business, and we started putting a coalition of folks together, and now we have approximately 200 or more major business leaders around the state in all our major cities who are opposed to the unfettered building of old technology coal-fired plants.
So do you find essentially two different business cultures developing here, one the old style and another that's looking towards a very different future?
Well, I think the old style is not developing anymore. I think that most forward-looking business people realize that we have to make better use of the resources that we have, and there has been a feeling in Texas of just using everything as quickly as we can, and there's really no limits on our growth. And now we realize that there are, and we have to use our resources more efficiently. And that's what we want to do. We want to use our resources efficiently. And electric power and power generation can all be used more efficiently. Texas is one of the leading users of electricity in the United States. The average Texan uses, for example, 50% more electricity per capita than the average Californian. And so we have to figure out how to use our resources more efficiently, and that's what we're devoting our business coalition, Texas Business for Clean Air, to doing.
So what was it like to go out and organize the top level of business for this purpose? Was it something that many others were already thinking about, or did you have to do a lot of persuasion?
It wasn't a hard sell. Most of the people that we talked to, and they're all big names around the state who have agreed to use their names, it was relatively easy to tell them the story, and especially about the attainment issue, and they were joining right up. So we were able to recruit people fairly easily and fairly quickly, and the number of people who responded negatively were relatively small. So I think we had little problem persuading people to join.
Sounds like not only are you specializing in hotels now, you're specializing in coal and energy issues. You're becoming familiar with it in a hurry. Is this something you're going to continue to pursue?
Well, I think a coalition like this has never existed in Texas before of business leaders. And this is not a political issue. Our group spans Democrats to Republicans at all levels and in all groups. And I think that our goal is to make sure that we continue to promote these things, and we have a good organization, and we intend to continue.
We have seen this more and more in the West, especially as we've done programs and found that there's a whole new breed of what might be called renewable Republicans. And some of them are ranchers and very traditional kinds of people who are generally conservative, but they're conservative and conservationist now.
Well, the conservative and conservationist come from the same root, and that means using your resources wisely. So that's what we want to do. We want to use our resources wisely. And we have an opportunity to do that now in Texas, because Texas is a conservative state. But we were, no pun intended, fired up by this issue because it was such a bad plan. And we intend to continue lobbying for clean air in our major cities. No one wants to see a brown stain on the horizon, you know, during a hot summer day. No one wants their children to breathe bad air, or their employees to, you know, have to pay higher health premiums because they suffer from asthma or some other breathing-related disease. So we're all in favor of technologies that help the clean air and conserving and using our electricity wisely. Business is all about efficiency anyway, and this is not a new concept for us.
Dallas businessman David Littman. I'm Mark Summer, and this is A World of Possibilities, distributed by the WFMT Radio Network.